blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Sarvam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the choice and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 great prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhamma. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day, oh, happy blessed place, oh, happy blessed time, oh, happy blessed path, oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi salaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Setting the intentions and allowing life to guide the process of this project, that I get lit up about it even when I'm not doing it.
So it's the commitment to being lit up that you notice just generates that lit upness.
Right, exactly. And then there's a supposing process that says, it's karma. I'm looking at Vichanga karma as this unlovability. I'm unlovable and I'm unworthy.
So a big chunk of karma being that you are unlovable and unworthy.
Right. And it's the dark forces of conditioning that is always on the other side of that process of being lit up.
So you can see that the opposing force in action to that being lit up is that other karmic disposition to being unlovable and being unworthy.
And I picked a project that takes me, as life is dropping in these ideas, takes me in front of groups of people in performances that I've never done before. And the accompanying self-talk and sensations is at a level I've never experienced. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the self-talk and sensations, I'm getting the impression that they are about being unlovable and about being unworthy.
Exactly. Exactly. And the self-talk is something like, well, you can't do that. Gee, you look stupid. Well, that's dumb. People will not like you. People actually, they'll hate you. And the craziest one that dropped in this morning was, you'll get arrested.
That was just insane. It sort of brings up that, whatever conditioning is yattering us about the most is the direction to go in. And it seems that you are doing that with your project.
Yes, and It's saying what I'm going to do next is not allowed. It's not permissible, and I'm going to be punished for it.
In the world of conditioning, it's not allowed in that.
Yes, yes, and that's so far not of any of the information I received here at the monastery. And so I'm just going to see what happens. Go through this fear and this the sensations we call it right now in my chest are like I've had. I'm going to save a lot of money on Starbucks. Because I used to drink coffee to get the sensations I'm having right now, which is just wicked, this caffeinated hyperness, this jolt. Almost my heart is actually palpitating. Mm-hmm. It feels like I'm skipping beats. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Which is interesting. Those could also be, those could be associated with fear, they could be associated with excitement, you know.
Yes.
Any story could be attached.
Right, and I think it's the for the longest time, associating that energy and that, and I could even label it as anxiety as something that's wrong, mm-hmm. and it's uncomfortable, and it shouldn't be happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's wrong, it's uncomfortable, it shouldn't be happening. Mm-hmm.
So we'll do this and see what happens.
I'm looking at something familiar again. The place of going for it, making a commitment, giving everything I've got, without engaging, or I don't even know, maybe you do have to engage and the two things happen simultaneously, but without engaging, let's see, I just read something that in a book on Zen recently that just stated it perfectly. I wish I could get it, but it basically, without engaging the trying hard process. Mm-hmm.
So going for it, giving it everything you got without engaging the trying hard process.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've been talking recently a lot in groups around the shift of not making to-do lists and another piece of that of that I've set these intentions and then kind of let them go. Not even on purpose necessarily, it's just I haven't done my usual, all right, now let's see, we want to get from A to B, and so here are all the steps in between, and da-da-da.
Kind of checking in to see how things are going.
Yeah,
and, yeah.
Actually, that's well put, because that's, I think, one of the things that's a huge danger zone. For me, at least, is the checking in. Because mm-hmm. who's checking in and with whom?
Yeah.
See that. And so it's just, so the reason I'm looking at it again is that I guess it was, let's see, today's Sunday. Was it just Tuesday? Boy, it's one of those, it feels like a long time, but Tuesday on the radio show, Sherry was talking to someone who was going through a difficult period, and she used the image of when we're in a difficult time, if we don't have a very well-established practice of learning, of being able to put the attention where we want it to be, we're like fish in a barrel being shot.
Right.
And that was such a powerful image for me.
Yeah.
And I realized, boy, that feels like that sometimes. Mm-hmm. It really can, where when really difficult things come up, it's like, so anyway, it motivated me to want to sharpen that skill.
Yes. Yeah, I'm reminded, you know, we practice for the hard times. It's,
exactly.
You know, yeah. Can't expect them to show up and suddenly, like, oh, yes, I remember that practice. I'll try now.
Yeah. Which is such a perfect setup, isn't it? Because it's going to fail miserably then. And not because of anything other than, you know, I'm going to try my triple axel for the third time on the Olympic ring. So it's not going to happen.
Exactly. The conditioning is there saying, Well, see, it doesn't work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Why even bother practicing?
Right.
So, and that's been really fun, and it's been everything. And kind of been charting as I go all the things that come up. And one of the things that comes up is this try-hard process. And it doesn't start that way, but it becomes that fairly quickly, of sort of an efforting to do that.
So it's the try-hard process arises in this commitment to practice.
Focusing attention
on
the try-hard to focus attention.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well,
it gives you a headache, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It leads in the direction that I don't really want to be headed. But I had this interesting breakthrough with it where I realized I was just kind of being quiet with it and holding it lightly. And I realized, well, you know what? If I just keep doing it anyway, even if I am engaging the process of trying hard and figuring it out, it has to shift. Because it's just how things work.
Yeah.
They always do.
Yeah.
And then I just suddenly, it had this like almost visceral sense of, you know, I'm on this path that I really want to be on, I've chosen to be on, and that conditioning was about to pull me off in this place where it always can, which is that, you know, look at it, you're just trying hard.
Exactly.
You're just trying hard. And it's this sense of like, oh yeah, shoot, I am. And I just got it. Well, so what? Okay, so I'm trying hard. But like, if I just keep doing that and stay conscious, at very least, I'll see a whole lot about trying hard.
All right. Perfect. You know? Because, you know, what you say is true. But, I mean, wow, what a perfect setup to just, you know, derail you on that. And to just have that acceptance. Like, yeah, right, okay, trying hard. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try hard. I'm not going to try at all. I'm going to do everything imaginable.
Yeah.
But I'm committed to directing my attention.
And, you know, if let's see if I can say it, what I just saw when you were reflecting that. If what I'm doing in learning to direct my attention, you know, for each of us, feels like staying here in the face of the karma that is Jen, in my case. And so, well, duh, of course, what's going to come up is trying hard and figuring it out and trying to do it right. So, okay, great. Because that's the thing that I'm going to have to just keep my eye on the ball as that comes up. Not try not to do it, because that's just the same thing.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, having the karma arise like that is probably
necessary.
You know,
not exciting.
Exactly. Which
yeah.
It just arises out of that commitment
yeah.
to focus the attention. Like, okay, well, here's the karma.
Yeah. And it's funny because when I can really, really feel that and give myself a moment to take that in, it always is a relief, exciting, full of possibility, because it's like, oh, right, that's all I'm doing. it's all about that. It's not about, wait, I'm not supposed to be like that. I can't do, let me try,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Just in your and talking about that, I mean, I can feel the excitement in that of just really being willing to have all that arises and be there with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Really, exactly. And it's really a big, big place because it takes away the fear of, oh God, something difficult's going to happen or I'm going to feel the way I want to feel. Or I do this little thing where I sort of pray, if you will. Sort of in the morning, ask for help from whoever's out there, you know, with this intention. And what I'm asking for is assistance with just being here, mm-hmm. however that looks. What it's the funniest thing. One of the things conditioning throws at me is like confusion. Wait, what does it mean to be here? I can't remember. Mm-hmm. How does that feel? Mm-hmm. This is bizarre. Like, and so I say, you know, I know it sounds funny, but sometimes I don't know what that looks like or what that is. So I really need help. And the sense of that, and then I sort of say to the mentor, and the mentor and I will take the piece of learning to be okay with whatever feelings come up in that. Mm-hmm. So it's like this sense of, you know, if the universe will assist me in like just being here, it feels like the work for the mentor and the being to expand the, because there's a lot of stuff that's going to come up in that that's mm-hmm. uncomfortable, right? Just being here in this, just being here in that, just being here. But that it's possible to be okay with all of that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, when you said that thing of, I can't remember what you said, but it reminded me that it's a very big and free and, in a sense, relaxing place.
Yeah.
That all of it is, I really want to practice being okay with all of it, to be able to be present with all of it.
Yeah, and I think you're saying that that's possible with a mentor there with that being and, you know, asking for life's assistance and being present. And as long as the mentor's right there with that being, you know, there's the, we're ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm quite certain they're made up distinctions, but they're helpful.
Yeah.
The thing of, like, it feels like the work with the mentor is really to love the being and to support her and to pull her hand and all that sort of thing as life opens the possibilities. And it seems like, you know, the way I'm using the terms, life is sort of this, just offers the opportunity, just, I don't even know how to say it, it just completely, it's funny, these aren't the right words, but trusting the adequacy of the, you know, life is adequate to life, kind of. And that, so it just offers whatever all the time, not at all worried that it's going to be hard or whatever. And so it feels like the place that the mentor, sort of that I make up, is that really kind of holding the hand of the being, because it's, you know, all can feel big and scary and all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
That was really interesting. What was helpful for me to see is sort of like the projection I was making. This is like getting that layer of skin, mm-hmm. you know, this thing that I just always do,
mm-hmm.
and how I always imagine conditioning is just every time we see something that it has kept us from seeing, then it circles around and makes it a problem that we're seeing it.
Uh-huh.
So what I was seeing about that was, for me, you know, if efforting is another one, or seeking approval, any of those, it would come around and say, oh, you can't do that. You're just seeking approval. And what I just got was, that's just another layer of self-hate.
Yes.
You know, really what the message is you need to hate that. You need to reject that. Rather than, oh, there it is again. You know, and just keep working at it. I mean, I just hadn't seen that so clearly, that it's just a deeper and deeper and deeper level of self-hate.
Mm-hmm. It never gives up, does it? It's circling around all the time. Whatever awareness is arising, just to fold that into the process of self.
Which is conditioning, is projection.
Mm-hmm.
And if I get caught in that, seeing anything as a problem, I'm just buying into that projection.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other image that came up as I was listening was, it's almost like that for the mentor, in a sense, looks through us,
mm-hmm.
you know, to something that we are that isn't us, almost, you know, like the bigger thing that we're part of that isn't us. And that's what the mentor sees all the time.
So the mentor can see that bigger part, kind of look through this identity into the bigger.
Yeah. And so never projects that. So it frees us to look at all that stuff ourselves, because the mentor doesn't get stopped there. The mentor doesn't see any of that as a problem. Mm-hmm. So if we can stand with a mentor, then we can see it, but we don't get stopped with it. It's not a problem. We can kind of, with the mentor, look through that and realize that, you know, it's just another layer.
So we can stand with the mentor, we can see it. I think referring to the karma and to just look through it and see that as just another layer, but it's not who that person is, who that being is.
Right. Yeah, it's not only not a problem, it's not even who we are.
It's not even who we are, right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. What I'm seeing in what's been shared so far this morning is how generous life is.
How generous life is.
Yeah, that that we are on a path to find ourselves and be whole and be part of all that is, and that on the way, in practicing that, everything comes up that keeps us from getting, from being there, not getting there, because we already are there. Mm-hmm. We already are everything we want to be, but this conditioning business that we got, this backpack of self-hate and all these voices coming around with us, is between us and who we really are. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so I wanna be here, and my karma is to try really hard, so I'm practicing being here, and of course then I'm told I'm trying really hard. And so, fine. That's what I need to see. That's something that is between me and being here, okay? It's not something that I need to then, but I'll go to my own instead of somebody else's, it's not. As we started with the 300-1,000 project. So I've been really wanting to find this thing that lights me up, that I can then do and make money and serve the world and, you know, slide through the last however many few years I had with my heart wide open and opened up and
rich.
And having sufficient resources to be comfortable. Yeah. And no wonder the being feels a little tense around all of it. But you know, what I see is that I wouldn't be having that as something I'm looking at for myself unless I already knew that was, I already knew that. I already had that on some level. So the voice is telling me, you don't have that, and you can't have that. That's too hard, or you don't know what it is. You've never known what you want to do. Well, I just did an exercise. I had an assignment, and I did it. I didn't have a goal or anything in it, but the assignment was to look at how did it go? How was it? I forget how it was worded, but what I went back through my life and kind of looked at, how did I get from there to here? The choices that I have made have not been the choices that my conditioning would have. I just haven't chosen what my conditioning would have chosen had I been really following it. Mm-hmm. What I saw was that I have been, from probably the age of 12, 13, seeking to know myself. Mm-hmm. In the way that we're practicing now. Mm-hmm. I thought at first, I didn't know I was trying to find myself. I thought I was trying to find information, understanding, meaning, you know. So it went through the gamut, you know, starting with all these different things I've gone through, but the thread through it all is the same thread that is activating my desire to be present and to contribute now to the, you know, because I'm kind of sliding towards the end here, and wanting that. Well, you know, it's a. That doesn't mean I'm ready, you know. I'm not. I was sitting yesterday. I was watching a conference on the computer, and I sat there and I leaned back and I went, "I'm coming alive. I'm alive. This is the feeling I've always wanted, and I'm having it. Mm-hmm. I'm alive. I'm feeling. I was weeping. I was so there. And so yeah, no, I am not ready to go. I mean, this is like the beginning. I don't say that with that, but I mean, I say that I'm committed to, and I'm talking way too much for you to ever reflect.
There's been that thread there in your entire life, seeing it from you recognize the time you were 12 or 13, that it's that authentic nature that's always been there. And it seems that it's always had different labels, you know, like I'm trying to get information, I'm trying to, you know, I don't remember what else you said, but you know, actually, you can see that has been there, that just who you really are.
Well, actually, it's been a spirit of inquiry into the nature of me and life.
A spirit of inquiry
that has had me always, you know, taking the next step, reading this, going to this talk, looking into that, taking a starting postgraduate degree. I never finished it, but all of those different things were coming from that same desire to connect with something beyond, you know, getting up every day and muddling around and going to bed and getting up the next day and getting up and do it again. You know, something greater, some.
Yeah, and as you started out in the beginning, it's just saying, you know, that what got something greater was always there.
Always there.
And it was, you know, disguised under a backpack of self-hate and all of that we carry around with us.
Yeah.
And it just sounds like you've had a really great experience of remembering that.
Yeah.
Yesterday with the I'm alive.
Yeah. Yeah, in a visceral experience of that which you were seeking is causing you to seek.
Yes.
And just seeing the inherent perfection of the design. I mean, I don't know if it's designed consciously or if it's just inherently perfect and beautiful, that all of this stuff that we're trying to kind of resist and get rid of so we can, you know, be whatever we think we're supposed to be, it's all part of what's taking us there, what's leading us there.
Yeah.
It feels like to me, experientially,
Yeah, there's just nothing that we would ever want to get rid of. It's all brought us to this place.
Yeah, and how could someone else actually teach us what we need to, or any other thing? I mean, each of us has our own particular chemistry and karma and everything, and so it's all like our code. We're coded, you know, to understand ourselves, because we're the only ones who has that code and has lived through the manifestation of that coding. And so it's just amazingly perfect.
It's amazingly perfect.
Yeah.
And what a gift to just to be able to see that perfection.
Yeah.
And to embrace it.
Yeah.
But a way different, I mean, that's what we were talking about earlier, a way different experience than resisting and thinking that things have to be different and this is a mistake and I've got to fix that.
But that's part of it too, because I am in the I mean, this is the, you know, we go like this and this. So right now I'm in a place where, woo, I've got that larger perspective. Yeah. And, you know, I've just come out of the valley, I can tell you. You know, and I'm going back. I know, that's just kind of how it goes. So I am living it up right now, but, you know, because I know it's not going to last forever. But it's nice, though. It's nice because it seems like each time I go in, down, deeper, there's a deeper experience of that, mm-hmm. that experience, a deeper whatever. And then coming up, there's like integrating a little more each time into how it's all kind of part of something and goes together and it's unfolding.
Yeah. And none of those experiences are ever lost. I mean, they change, but you know, that experience, we carry it with us and enables us, it seems, to go deeper, go higher, go whatever.
I think because we're really practicing and paying attention mm-hmm. and using it all, kind of, whether we consciously know that it's happening, it kind of sticks and then the next level, the next mm-hmm. layer seems to evolve out of that. And, yeah.
Great, thank you. Susan?
I was looking this morning as we were meditating, trying to meditate, so that kind of efforting thing that my brain would do. And I had a pretty fun time, because normally what would happen is I would be out doing what I'm doing, thinking about this or obsessing about that, and the brain would just be doing. And then I'd come back and self-hate would come in and beat me up. But every time I came back, I heard something say, "This is fascinating." I would start back counting the breath, you know, back to the basics, Susan. Inhale, exhale, one, inhale. And then I would go off. And as I was practicing, I realized I wasn't going off. So it was doing what it does, you know, the brain or the mind or whatever. And I must have been, but I was still breathing, you know, My attention must have been going off with it. And then I would come back and my attention would be on the breathing. And there was something, I quit fighting it. At first there's like, oh, you know, that's miserable. I mean, look at my face when I'm off, you know, my body's all tense, and I come back and it's relaxing. So there was somebody, you know, wanting a certain experience. There was a right way to do it. But then as I thought, well, it's just doing what it's doing. And it's going to keep doing it because that's what it does. And I have a practice. You know, I have a choice. I have a choice to attend to the breath as quickly as I notice I'm not. And I was practicing with attending from lower in the body, so focusing on a lower point. Like here at my solar plexus, breathing.
Rather than the mind.
A lot of times when I'm moving my attention, I'm directing it from efforting, I guess it would be the same word, but I'm focusing it from my brain. You know, the brain is now going to tense up the body and everything is going to pay attention to nothing. You know, you can't see anything, you know, or you can, but it's like looking through a really squinted eye. Yeah. You know, you don't see the whole picture.
And it's all just happening and from here up.
It's all happening from there up, but it really affects the body. The sensations in the body are tense. And when the attention is dropped down, it's sort of almost like, I said this probably years and years ago, when I lived in the monastery, I would talk about looking through the breath. And it really was looking through something down here. It was looking through, like my solar plexus, you know, it was breathing in and out and attending from that part of my body.
Mm-hmm. And what was your experience when you did that with your body?
Oh, relaxed.
So the body relaxed and you were attending to the breath. Did you say seeing through?
Yeah, it was like watching the moment through that, from that perspective, rather than through the eyeballs and the brain. Exactly.
And I'm curious, that was when you were in attending to the breath in that way, is when you noticed that it was not actually you that was leading.
Right. I just noticed it wasn't anything to get all uptight about. Just what's happening.
It's just something interesting.
It's just fascinating. fascinating. I was like, wow, that's fascinating. Because I was fascinated because it was so much more pleasant to actually just be present and attending through that, feeling the breath go in and out and count. So I was fascinated about the conditioned response, because so often I was going out. So, I mean, it would get me. I would leave, my attention, I guess, it would start doing its thing, and I would leave with it. Even though something else, you know, God, was still sitting here breathing, or whatever, life was still sitting here breathing, you know, my body didn't look much different to the outside perspective. But all of a sudden, I would just be thinking about nonsense. That, and it wasn't even important things. It was just like the TV, you know, we don't really have, so we were on vacation, you know, and I would get the TV. it was just horrible, all the things out there, and of course I land on the most disgusting, worst thing, and you know, just watch it, it's kind of like that. You know, it's the same with the attention on what's going on in my head, because it really isn't important, because what I'm here doing is breathing. But it makes it all seem so life and death.
Yeah.
Including it takes practice. And the other thing I was looking at as people were talking was noticing that when I hear my head saying, there you go, trying again. You know, we know, years of practice, it is not about trying. I think that it's, well, of course it's lying to me, but what I notice is, in that moment, I actually haven't been trying. I haven't been efforting. And then, it doesn't tell me when I have been efforting. When it's got me, it doesn't come in and say, oh, there you are, efforting. You know, it's sort of the opposite. So anyway, I've just been sort of playing, believing the opposite. You know, we hear that all the time here.
So in fact, when you hear that, there you go, efforting, that may actually know you're not.
And as it says, you're not even trying. You know, look, you're just a ball of mush, and you've quit practicing, and you are not participating.
Yeah.
I can know that probably I am really participating.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I've just been playing. And I did want to report back about the twin fight thing. So here's what
You want to tell people
okay,
you had
so
an assignment?
Okay, so folks who weren't here, I had an assignment. I went to visit my family of origin. I have a twin sister, and we always get in a fight. And here's what I noticed happened with me. We got there and I was having a really good time. And you know, really good times, Sherry often talks about when you're feeling really good, it's the most dangerous time because you sort of fall asleep. So I'm thinking, gosh, I'm enjoying myself. I shouldn't really say the thing about. So my plan was
just to bring up fighting at this point.
I didn't really want to bring up fighting. I should have known at that point to bring it up. Because, so the trip goes along, and it's going along, and next time I'll count, so it's probably about day five. And we started now this conversation that starts out benign, you know, but it's not benign, because you can just feel it. It's like karmic tension, you know. Karmic tension goes along, and then something has to happen. So we did not get in a huge fight, but we did get, what happened to me, I can't really articulate to her, but after it was over, sort of separated for a little bit, and then we came back, and she hugged me, and I said, you know, my assignment was, and I was telling her and her husband, and anybody who was there listening, I said, you know those Buddhists, because you know they're not Buddhists. I said, this is what they told me to do. My sister was like, why didn't we do it? Why didn't you tell me? I said, well, I went unconscious and forgot. But the thing that I thought was most fascinating about it was I was sitting there watching it happen. So it was the same as like watching meditation. So I'm sitting there feeling the karma. Mm-hmm. And this isn't pleasant karma. This is unpleasant karma. Mm-hmm. You know, pleasant karma, I ignored. I thought, oh no, it's too pleasant. It's all fun and happy. Well, then unpleasant karma always follows it, you know. If you're in karma, you're in karma. So there I was. In the taking it personally, so here's my karma going on, taking it personally, fear, getting my feelings hurt, getting defensive, you know, everything that's being said by the other person is, negative, even though it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't really real, and I could in a lot of ways see that it's hitting a filter. So I didn't actually believe that it was her. But there was some, I was you know, I just felt trapped. Mm-hmm. That trapped in karma, like, here I am, I've got tools, all I need to do is not really kindly just kind of say I have to go to the bathroom. You know, I don't have to make a big deal of anything. I don't have to, we have to end this conversation, you know, just.
But you were able to see. You were able to see what was happening at the time it was happening.
I was, and not believe, and well, I was going in and out, of course, and believing it, but I could see it and then not see it and then see it and not see it. So we both agreed it was not a fight. It was, it was just a karmic thing that happened that did not turn, that didn't take much time at all, actually. If, you know, if you sort of timed it, it probably, the conversation was like half an hour and then the separation was 15 minutes and then it was over. So
I just got this image. It wasn't a fight. There was this, you know, this karma over here.
It really was.
That was doing its thing.
It was doing its thing. It was doing its thing.
Yeah.
And I think for me, over the years, the practice has been I have a better chance at not going along with it so often. Mm-hmm. And I would say that that happened. You know, it didn't, mm-hmm. wasn't perfectly perfect the way that I would have liked it to be, but
the way the conditioning was.
I saw a lot about it, and I was again in the same way this morning. I am just fascinated how someone as practiced and perfect as I could get, you know, so stuck, so entrenched, so quickly, and absolutely not be able to hardly move mm-hmm. out of it.
It is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
To just see how that happens.
Yeah, and so really to just not take it personally, it's just karma.
Yeah.
It's just what happens to every single one of us, every single day, every single moment, we get to practice with it.
It just seems a lot what you brought up at the beginning of your discussion, you know, just seeing in the meditation period that it's not actually you that's, mm-hmm. that's leaving, and the same thing that happened with your sister, seeing that too, you know, it's that karma that just keeps coming up, and it's...
And I gotta keep practicing.
You gotta keep practicing. It, well,
doing all of the things, listening, and talking, and participating, and showing up, and...
Yeah, yeah, and it's what you get to practice with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
That am a really beautiful picture this morning of dropping, trying to figure it out, and I'm just going to the simplicity of love and acceptance. Mm-hmm. And this week while I've been volunteering, the content, the karma that has been really getting me is about time. And all of my experience in life of time is that I am much more relaxed and present when things are slowed down. And in fact, the slower things are going, the more present I can be. Mm-hmm. And so this is, of course, an incredible setup. with living on monk time, where everything feels very accelerated. Mm-hmm. And then it creates this unnatural duality between, well, I want to be present and here, and I want to participate as much as I can and help as much as I can and fit in, you know, fitting in really being the driving force. And I have not received the advanced training in dishwashing yet, and the speed that some of the monks can go through the line with is mind-boggling to me. And you know, if I happen to be in that line, it's like a pressure cooker, because if I go faster, the water just goes everywhere, all over me and the sink, and I feel very stressed, and that's not really the objective. And the karma comes in and does really interesting things, like, you know, at one of the orientations, One of the monks was describing the creek and that it takes about 45 minutes to get to the creek. And then later in group, I'm hearing about how the monks go to the creek once or twice a day. And I'm thinking, Jesus, I can barely make it back to my hermitage at the end of the night. And so I translated that into that they can go to the creek and back in 45 minutes. And of course, for me, just to get to the creek, you know, I'm starting to time myself now to see how out of sync I really am with all of this. And it just feels like such a strong amount of karma. And there's this beautiful thing posted on the board all week about how our thoughts create our experience. And so I decided to look at, well, you know, all of my experience says that when things are slowed down, I have more of an experience of presence. But maybe it's possible. Maybe I can plant the little seed thought that it's possible. There's a reality out there where it's possible for things to be moving quickly, and I can be relaxed, and I can be present. Mm-hmm. Now, planting that seed feels like planting it in rock. It just feels like it's just not going to happen, you know? I mean, and so I'm thinking, well, you know, I should bring this to group, and I should talk, you know, get some guidance about how to till this soil a little bit so that this seed has a chance, you know, because I can maybe see it's possible in somebody else's karma. Maybe in somebody else's karma to go really fast is really relaxing, and it's just not my particular karma. So I'm working through all of this and trying to figure it out. And then all of that blabbity blah, gookity gook of being in your mind and trying to figure something out. And this morning, my partner is working with his resistance about writing a love note and putting it on his pillow. And so I'm about to take a shower, and he says, you know, will you help me make the bed so I can write love notes and put them on the pillows? And, you know, there's this little subtle plural in there. And what do you mean love notes on pillows? And he says, well, I'm going to write one for you too. And I just, the idea that I deserved a love note, that this person who is all caught up in all this struggle, like, could deserve that. It opened something in me, mm-hmm. really beautiful, so that when I went to go in the shower, I got this voice come in, quoting this line from this movie I had just seen, where this character, what saves the day is love, and loving anyway, mm-hmm. loving even if. And so this voice came in and said to me, I love you even if you're slow as molasses.
I love you even if you're slow as molasses.
Yeah. And yeah. And it was so powerful to me, that simplicity. It's just the acceptance. It's just the love and the acceptance, mm-hmm. and all of the other figuring out. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. it's just more figuring out, mm-hmm. and coming back to the simple is really so often all that's needed.
So just coming back to the simple is what's needed, when in this case it was coming back to the love for that being, no matter what was going on, no matter if she was as slow as molasses, no matter if that seed was planted in a rock, and you know that she had a belief that she had to go slow in order to be present, or that she should be
speeded up. She should be this, or she should be that, or what, you know, like all of that complexity. It just, boom. It was like it all just disappeared in that one simple sense. Mm-hmm. It was so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, one of the things that I've been seeing this morning as we've been talking and just sort of evolved as the conversation went on is that I this year, as we're looking at being lit up, am often told by my head that, well, nothing really lights me up.
Nothing really lights
yeah,
you
not,
up.
Not really, you know, not big. You know. and what actually I just have seen in our conversation this morning is basically everything lights me up.
That's a great example of how it'll tell us exactly
right.
What's not
exactly,
true.
Exactly. Yeah. And the only thing that keeps me from noticing that is the story that nothing really lights me up. And what just sort of came to me as in hearing what people were saying is that so the experience of being lit up is when I am letting the energy of life be my energy, when I am participating in that energy. And the experience of not being lit up is when I'm either actively resisting that energy or at a lower level, just ignoring it.
Mm-hmm. So the experience of not being lit up is when you're actively resisting or ignoring the energy of life.
Yeah.
And being lit up is actually being engaged in that energy,
energy. Yeah. Yeah. And... yeah, mostly just that, and I just saw a little example of that in the past week. We had a lot of guests in my home and around my home this last week, and pretty constantly around last week. I mean, like all the time, And that's a situation where conditioning has often told me I would not be lit because I'm an introvert. I don't do people all that well all that time. But that was not my experience. And there was one moment where, I don't know, we'd come back from a pretty active day and sort of people dispersed a little bit to regroup for the next phase. And the next phase was eating, and I was the cook. And some part of me went, well, shit, you know, I'm sorry, excuse me, but, you know, how come everybody else gets to go take a shower and lie down, and, you know, and I just have to start cleaning up from the last meal and start cooking the next meal, you know, and I had a moment of just having a little bit of a, I was starting to have a little bit of a fit, you know, I mean, it was, I was throwing things all by myself in the kitchen, and then I just said, oh, forget it, you know, I mean, I just went, so, this is what you're doing. You are going to be cooking dinner, so, you know, go well. And, you know, that's all it took, was just, never mind, you know, this is what's going on. And to me, that's just an example of, you know, I was resisting what was happening in the energy for a minute, and as soon as I said, oh, well, this is what's going on, it was back. Mm-hmm. And I was fine, mm-hmm. and I was back into being lit up again. And it took about that long. And there are definitely times in my life when it would have taken a lot longer than that.
So just really noticing that, hey, what was going on was that you were going to cook the meal and saying, and accepting it.
Yeah.
And letting go of that resistance and then having that lit up feeling return.
Yeah.
It's a great, great experience for an example of, you know, what the difference between resisting it and accepting it, what that's like.
Very, very clear difference. And then I'm just noticing that funny thing that conditioning was just saying to me as I was sitting here going, oh, well, it's just the difference of accepting, you know, being with the energy or not being with the energy. And conditioning says, well, you know, when you didn't think anything lit you up, you couldn't think of something to do to raise money, and now that everything lights you up, you still won't be able to know it because there's too many choices.
It's so helpful.
It's such a character, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm just struck again, you know, what an amazing act of service that is too, every time that we just embrace things the way they are and let life come through us and you know how nice that is for us and for all of life.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I don't know, but for whatever reason, recently I've had experiences of the little parts inside of me. I mean, I know we talk about pretty much all the time is we have these little parts inside of us, but to a certain degree it seems a little esoteric and like, you know, like, oh, I can't really see him or them. So it's, you know, it's a great theory, and, you know, I can kind of attach attributes and things like that to them. But, well, what I started off saying was that for whatever reason, I'm starting to have memories of when I was little, mm-hmm. and all the things that I did. And they've just been flooding in, like, mm-hmm. I don't know why, but they're coming in, you know, like, I have an identity of being someone who has no memory of mm-hmm. what it was like to be, you know, like from my early young years. Now it's like, and I'm just sitting down for whatever reason, and all of a sudden I have this memory of learning to try to draw a cartoon character called Jabberjaw. It was a shark. And I had pages and pages of like doing the same mark over and over and over again, trying to get it to, I mean, I must have, yeah, it was just amazing how many pages of it, and still never looked like it, you know. It's just like one arc was like that with a crayon, like went off the page, another one was small, and I tried to draw it all the sorts of different ways.
So having all these memories flood in of experiences as a child, it sounds like were previously not accessible to you.
No, not accessible, and yeah, I mean, just dozens of things that I would do that I would just say right now lit me up. Mm-hmm. And I would do them for no reason other than that fact, mm-hmm. like, it didn't have to be anything. Mm-hmm. It didn't have to make sense. Like, I mean, I just play in the backyard. I loved Planet of the Apes, so I would like put gloves on my feet and pretend like I was a monkey, and I would just run around. and you know, I just loved it. I might still do that.
All the time.
I just might have to.
Yeah. Sounds like not too concerned what people thought.
No, not really. I mean, when you're a particular age, no one really cares. You know, it's just one of those things. And then after a while, you know, you just have to, it just goes away. And I look at that part of like, how does all that go away? And I keep having this experience of sitting down and seeing that relationship like visually, like a drawing of like little kids just all running around doing their own thing, no care. And conditioning is like, I don't know, this big party pooper, like reason why not to, mm-hmm. you know, like you'll be made fun of, or you look like an idiot, or grow up, or just anything, you know, like
just a kibosh on stuff.
Put the kibosh on stuff. So that figure is kind of like over here. And I think that we're the kids, and then there's something on the other side of that, which is, you know, the adult that I've kind of always wanted, that, and then would clear a space so that the kid can go ahead and do all the things that the kid wants to do, mm-hmm. and because the kid has the energy and all the enthusiasm, mm-hmm. and everybody's like a little energizer bunny, you know, just mm-hmm. plug that into mm-hmm. to anything, and can bring joy and energy to whatever it is that I need to do. It just, sometimes the kid needs a little guidance, and that's what the adult, I think, in that picture represents. It's the bridge, I think, to everything. And I think that's what we're practicing. And I just never saw it so clearly as it's all coming through. And I think that's what, and you know, everything that we've been doing feels like it's related to that, you know, the 300 for 1,000. It's like, mm-hmm. it's like the conditioning that is between the kid and is what we have to become, that, I don't know, just a mentor, that superhero, that person who can wear the cape to go over and
the mighty Avenger, out of the way.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. No,
I'm going for that kid,
yeah,
and make it safe for him to have that lit up experience of life. I think it's really interesting that that all falls away, and we lose any memory of mm-hmm.
those lit up experiences.
Oh,
you know,
yeah. It's not an accident, is it?
It seems like if those were alive and within us, you know, it'd be really hard to fall for that lie of, well, you look stupid. You know,
anything. It's like the, I'm too tired. I don't feel like it. It's the grown up version of, you know, the you look stupid and it's, you should grow up. And I mean, yeah, literally, it will take any kind of form it can that I would believe to keep me from accessing it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm just looking at my goal right now is to keep paying attention, allowing that energy to keep moving through and being open to whatever insights I have around it. Because I just remember. I'm sitting here and I can actually feel it. Like, it's like, I think that the overall theme is, it didn't really matter how many of the people were out there when they thought about me, anything. It didn't. I could have been on a desert island. I just remember playing in the snow for hours with little pieces of stick that were spaceships, you know. And it didn't matter. It really didn't matter what anybody else was doing. It didn't matter what I was doing. And for some reason, those things matter now, and I'm wondering why they matter now. And sense of that, but it's but they don't. I'm just being told that they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's how conditioning is playing with me now, is that it's keeping the kid in the dungeon. And saying that it's for my own good, and that I'll just have to see as I see more about it. But it feels like there are reasons.
There are reasons the kid is kept in the dungeon, and. And it sounds like you have a commitment right now to honor that energy and watch everything that's arising. And I don't know if you didn't say this, but honor those memories that are coming up. And
yeah, just letting them be there and see what happens.
Yeah. Just watch and report back to us.
Yeah. I think I need to do that drawing.
The shark.
I might, just for fun. I can actually picture it. So that'd be interesting to see what it comes out like. And maybe, anyway. Let's see. Yeah, that and the illustration of the relationship between all the parts. You know, like the, you know, that specter of the
So draw that relationship between. That would be interesting too.
And do it because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because part of how it always stops me is it matters.
And do it because it doesn't matter in the sense of...
doesn't matter what it comes out like.
What the picture comes out like.
Well, there's whole lots of it doesn't matter in all of it. It doesn't matter because there are other better things to do. It doesn't matter that... Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The whole slew of them.
All that doesn't matter is that you hear from conditioning.
It doesn't matter from here. It doesn't matter from here. Yeah. That I can do it for whatever reason.
Right. Not to meet any standard. Or,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will report. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. That's our time here.